This is America Weekend. I am Paul Harris. Thanks so much for listening. Earlier this week, the IPCC, that is the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, released part two of what they call their assessment report. In other words, there's the second half of a report that they first put out in September of last year about climate change. Whenever it comes to climate change, I like to bring in an expert to talk about it, and this guy is one of America's top climate scientists. His name is Michael Mann. He's the author of The Hockey Stick and the Climate Wars and a professor at Penn State. Michael, welcome back to America Weekend.
Thanks, Paul. It's good to be with you.
What did this second part of the IPCC report say?
Well, so this is the report on climate change impacts. The first part of the report was about the basic science of climate change. That came out last fall. And just last week, the second part, the report on the projected impacts of climate change, just came out. There's one more installment of the report to come out in a few weeks, the Working Group 3 report, which will be about mitigation solutions. What can we do to solve the problem? But this report makes clear that we certainly do have a problem. And it states, I think, in the starkest terms yet of any of the reports of the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, that climate change is no longer just some existential far-off threat that might impact polar bears decades from now. It is hurting us here and now. We have become the polar bear, in essence.
Yeah, because we always were hearing, ever since we first started hearing about climate change, at least in the public sphere, maybe 20 years ago, we always heard, oh, by 2050, this will happen. By 2060, right, that'll happen. Well, it's 2014, and we're already feeling some of those impacts. Now, of course, people see weather like what we saw this week with horrible hailstorms and tornadoes and rain and wind, and of course this horrible winter that made things miserable for so many people across the country, and often they conflate weather and climate. But I have to ask, was what we saw in the last few months and what we've seen weather-wise in the last couple of years part of what is happening to us now because of climate change?
Yeah, well, there are certain types of extreme weather events that we do think are becoming more common and more pronounced because of climate change, and that includes heat and drought, so extreme heat in the summer here in the U.S., like we've seen in the past several summers. A year ago, we had the warmest summer ever in the U.S., ever recorded. That is related to climate change and the fact that we are seeing record-breaking heat waves. We know that climate change is playing a role in that. The more widespread drought that we see in the summer here in the U.S., climate change is playing a role in that. The destruction of crops, the loss of livestock as a result of unprecedented summer heat and drought, climate change is playing a role in that. The increased heat stress and mortality from extreme heat here in the U.S., climate change is playing a role. So, in many cases, we can say that extreme weather events that are impacting us now are being influenced by climate change, are being made worse by climate change. Now, that having been said, there are other sorts of weather events that we're just going to continue to see because of the vagaries of weather. The fact that we had a pretty cold winter this last winter in the U.S., we didn't have a record-breaking winter, despite what you might think from some of the headlines we saw. In fact, there's no location in the U.S. where we broke any all-time records for cold this winter, despite the sort of some of the hype about how cold it supposedly was. And yet, at the same time, in recent summers, we have seen many all-time records for heat broken. So, you know, winter is still going to happen, and we're still going to have cold weather in the winter. But when we step back and we look at the statistics, what we see is that it's the number of extreme warm events that is increasing in the way that we expect from climate change. And it, you know, we've just seen the tip of the iceberg. I mean, what we might think of as record heat today will become a typical summer day decades from now if we continue on the course that we're on.
Now, you mentioned one thing that really caught my ear, and that was the effect on agriculture and particularly on crop yields. You know, the Hunger Games are very, very popular movies, thanks to Jennifer Lawrence and the books that they are based on. But when I hear that we're having climate affecting our crop yields, I can't help but wonder, could we get to a point where in some parts of the world where food is already scarce, crop yields have been, and agriculture have been affected so much by climate that we do end up leading to wars because of food?
Yeah, well, you know, Hollywood has presented a number of dystopian visions of the future that are not all that unlike the worst-case scenario that we could see by the end of this century or even by the middle of this century if we, you know, proceed with business as usual, if we continue to burn fossil fuels at unprecedented rates. Then, you know, whether we're talking about the Hunger Games or, you know, Soylent Green, a movie that came out decades ago and was in many respects quite prescient because it did envision a future where human beings were suffering food resource problems. We were running out of food because of climate change. If you go back to the movie, it turns out that they were implicating the warming of the globe. So when we actually take a sober look at the IPCC projections, they tell us that, we will see sharp decreases in agricultural yields over a large part of the tropical world where conditions are already pretty warm, and even a little bit of warming leads to very sharp drop-offs in the productivity of cereal crops. We used to think that maybe that would be offset by small gains at higher latitudes, places like the U.S., where the analyses told us that a longer growing season could actually lead to increased yields. And yet, something you alluded to in your previous question, the fact that we have seen unprecedented extreme weather in recent years, much of that extreme weather has actually decimated crops and has completely offset any increases we might have expected from longer growing seasons. And if you look at what the IPCC now concludes in their latest report, what they're saying is we are seeing a drop-off in agricultural productivity. We are seeing a threat to food resources, food security right now, and in part it's because of things that we hadn't fully accounted for, the effect that extreme weather events can have on crops and how that can offset what we previously thought might have been a mitigating factor. And it's a lesson that, many of the uncertainties, you sometimes hear the claim that uncertainty is a reason for inaction, but many of the uncertainties are now resolving themselves in the sense of the problem being worse than we had projected.
It all sounds very pessimistic. Is there any optimistic hope here? Are we at least doing anything better, Michael?
Well, there are some hopeful signs. And, you know, the most hopeful thing of all is the fact that there is still time. Yes, there's great urgency to solving this problem. And yes, we have to act quickly if we are going to avert committing to dangerous and potentially irreversible climate change. But what this report and what other reports tell us is there is still time to do that. We can still limit the warming of the globe to, you know, under 3.5 degrees Fahrenheit or so, so that we sort of protect ourselves against some of the worst potential impacts, but we have to act now. And, you know, the report, the mitigation report, which will come out in a few weeks, will lay out a pathway for doing that. There is a way to get there, and part of it is, you know, incentivizing clean energy, renewable energy, and leveling the market, the playing field in the marketplace so that we're not providing subsidies for fossil fuel interests, for fossil fuel energy that is degrading our planet, and instead that we incentivize clean energy that is not having that detrimental impact on our planet.
Unfortunately,
so if we can level the playing field, we can solve the problem.
Unfortunately, it doesn't seem like there's a lot of political will to do this because of the influence of big oil on Capitol Hill. What about the rest of the world? Are they doing better than we are?
Well, they are. You know, Europe is way ahead of us, and, you know, it's almost embarrassing. We are falling behind the rest of the world. We have always prided ourselves here in the U.S. as being leaders, and yet we're falling behind when it comes to clean energy. The rest of the world recognizes that that's the future. The future of the global economy is going to be a clean energy economy. They see that. China sees that. They're greatly outspending us in their investments on solar and wind technology. India, developing nations are spending more, they're investing more in renewable energy than we are. And, you know, China is actually having a serious discussion about implementing a carbon tax. Again, trying to level the playing field so that we incentivize clean energy. So we're falling behind in our competitiveness in the global marketplace. And that is, as you allude to, because in large part of intransigence, I hate to say it, but largely among congressional Republicans who have blocked any effort to deal with this problem and who continue to deny that the problem even exists. We've
got to get past
that.
Michael Mann, climate scientist and author of The Hockey Stick and the Climate Wars. The book is about how he was the victim of the climate wars, but this report says we're all going to be. Michael, thanks for joining me again. I'm Paul Harris. This is America Weekend. America.